lobs it. It's over. Richmond beats Iowa. And they advance.
The lead is six. Kentucky in the front court. Final 5 seconds. Up top, three by Brooks. On the way, he missed it. 1 second. Rebound comes to Drame, and that's it. David has stunned Goliath. The 15-seeded St. Peter's Peacocks, the tiny school of only 2,600 students, has knocked off mighty Kentucky. 85-79 in overtime. What a victory. What a ball game. What a story these St. Peter's Peacocks are.
Now with the shot clock turned off, KU can just dribble off the final 23 seconds and move on to face Creighton in the round of 32. Yesufu gets it across the timeline. The remaining Kansas fans still in the building at almost midnight all get to their feet. The final 10 seconds drip off the clock, and you can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win a 15th consecutive opening round victory for Kansas.
Well, it's a very, very crazy first day of the NCAA tournament. There's a lot of parity. As you heard there, Iowa, the chic pick from some idiots, including myself, to go to the Final Four. Today is Supreme Sacrifice Day. And I just want to say that I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
And I sacrificed my bracket for the betterment of KU. This is what I do in my bracket many years. It's reverse psychology. And this is true. I don't pick KU to go deep in the tournament. Hardly ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm okay to blow up my bracket. I also pick Duke to go usually very far. And I'm very, very happy when Duke and Kentucky lose. I'm happy to sacrifice my bracket. And if KU goes all the way to the national championship game, I'm losing the Sweet 16. I'm happy. I have no problem with that at all. So you're welcome. You're welcome, Richmond. You're welcome, St. Peter's. I picked Kentucky and Iowa in the Final Four, and half my Final Four already gone. So I've outdone myself this year, and I spent less time thinking about it than ever before. And people say, well, you think about it too much. Well, this year I didn't spend much time thinking about it, and that didn't work either. So believe it or not, there's 743 brackets that are still perfect in the country.
Man, I had two losses.
Which ones did you miss?
I missed, obviously, Kentucky.
Well,
I like
everybody
if you're
did.
Perfect and you if you're still perfect, you pick that means you pick St. Peter's, which is wild, man.
That is like, wild.
And so the other one I missed was UConn.
UConn?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, there's two 12s that won yesterday.
Yeah.
Let's anything local you want to pass along or we go?
Just all league teams that were posted yesterday from the Mid-Continent League. You can find all those at ncksports.com and you can look it back at the NCAA and MPL and again Mid-Continent League posted there at the website.
All right, and schedules for spring sports, we got them
start getting on there probably beginning of next week. We'll start putting all those on and getting them. Shouldn't take too long to get all that put together. So.
Okay, sounds good. So yesterday in the NCAA tournament, Michigan knocked off Colorado State, which is not an upset. It's 11 over a 6. It's a Big Ten versus the Mountain West. Come on now. 75-63 Michigan. They were down 15 in the first half. Providence, I had South Dakota State with an upset there. Missed that one. Providence beat South Dakota State 66-57. Memphis beat Boise State 64-53. Baylor all over Norfolk State 85-49. Tennessee, just like I was looking at the scores and it was close. Next thing I know, they're up 20. I'm like, wow. Tennessee beat Longwood 88-56. Richmond with the upset over number 5, Iowa 67-63. Gonzaga was tied with 14 minutes ago against the 16th seed Georgia State, but they win 93-72. Clark Kellogg calls it spurtability. Gonzaga and Tennessee have that. So does Arizona, by the way. North Carolina might have had the most impressive performance, an 8 over a 9. They dominated, 95-63. New Mexico State behind Teddy Allen. What a story. Teddy Allen was at Nebraska. He started with West Virginia, had a great freshman year in the Big 12. Then he went, I believe, to Nebraska, Wichita State, and he's been somewhere else, too. And then he finally landed at New Mexico State. He had 37 last night. 23 in the second half, perfect from the foul line. I think it was 12 for 12. And I'm happy for him because that's a kid that's gone through some travails off the court and has had to bounce around. And now he's in New Mexico State, and they just won a tournament game over UConn. And Chris Jans used to be an assistant at Wichita State. They weren't there at the same time, but there is a connection to the Shockers in two ways there. St. Peter's with the crazy upsets you heard over Kentucky, 85-79 in overtime. This is pretty crazy stuff. Kentucky lost to a university whose undergrad enrollment is 2,600, whose mascot is a peacock, and whose athletic budget is about $8 million. And Calipari, I think, makes at least five. To put the disparity between Kentucky and St. Peter's in perspective, Kentucky has four assistant coaches who make more than St. Peter's head coach, Shaheen Holloway. He's thought to make around $250,000 there at a private school. Kentucky's assistant coaches' salary ranges from $300,000
to $850,000. Yeah, it's wild.
It is.
All the money you spend on that, and then you get bounced by St. Peter's.
First time Calipari's lost in the first round with Kentucky. It's just amazing how you can look so dominant in Allen Fieldhouse against KU and then can't beat St. Peter's.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me. And I don't understand why Kentucky didn't call a timeout with 15 seconds going regulation so they could get it in the Oscar. I don't understand it. You know, Calipari, I mean, he's considered a great coach and all, but I didn't understand what he was doing yesterday, to be honest. Creighton beat San Diego State. San Diego State had a 14-point lead. Creighton advances 72-69 in overtime. Creighton lost their best big. He's probably out for the rest of the year, it looked like. It looked like a bad injury. And Creighton will be shorthanded without their starting point guard, without their starting post, and they're going to play KU next. So the bracket looks kind of open for KU. More on that in a moment. St. Mary's, they were down four in the first half and then just blew the doors off Indiana, 82-53. That was my 12-5, and, of course, that's the only five that won yesterday. That's how it works. Don't pick what I pick. Pick opposite of what I pick. Arkansas beat Vermont 75-71 in a 4-13 matchup. UCLA, man, they were on the ropes. They were down seven. Uh-huh. They came back and won by four. Baylor was sitting there. I thought there for a second Baylor was going to be the biggest winner yesterday. UCLA and Kentucky both lose. Yeah. First round. Man, that opened things up for Baylor.
Yeah.
UCLA did win 57-53 over the Zips of Akron. Great game last night. 18 lead changes. Murray State knocked off San Francisco 92-87 in overtime. So you're going to have either St. Peter's or Murray State in the Sweet 16. And, of course, KU winning last night, the late game. It was late because the game prior to them went to overtime. KU won 83-56. They were up big at halftime, 47-19, and roll to the victory. And Remy Martin, Bill Self didn't even know he could dunk, but he can.
Martin down the heart of the floor, dribbles between his legs twice.
Wrong cut. Let's try this one.
Here's a tip and a steal by Remy. Remy in the open court, up and away. A two-hand thunder jam. Remy Martin can dunk, baby, and Kansas fans on their feet.
Remy Martin was sensational when he came in. Instant offense and also was dishing the rock.
Martin down the heart of the floor, dribbles between his legs twice. Hooks a pass to David. What a feed. He lays it up and in. Martin with one dribble, right hand to left hand through the legs, and then a left hand rifle pass to David.
Yeah, Remy does look healthy, and it is an extra addition, no doubt. They're extra gear for this KU offense. Jalen Wilson got foul trouble, no problem. You have Harris, you have Martin. At one point, they had Yosefu out there. They had a small lineup. And Bill Self on Remy.
He and Juan were about perfect the first half. I think they were like, 9 of 10 combined. But, you know, I didn't know Remy could dunk a basketball until today. So that was a favorite moment. But the pass that he gave David in transition was pretty special.
Yes, absolutely was. And here's Self on the win overall.
I thought we did a lot of really good things the first half. Thought we shared it and we defended and we rebounded the ball pretty well, and after we got off to, you know, kind of calmed our nerves down a little bit, we were very efficient first half, and you know, second half we didn't play near as well. But it was a good team win, and certainly one that I'm glad we got, and especially in this crazy tournament, in this crazy day.
So KU moves on to the second round. They'll play tomorrow against Creighton, 1 o'clock pregame tomorrow on Z96.3 Lake, with tip-off scheduled for 1:40. For the Jayhawks down at Fort Worth. And, you know, there were a lot of great games. You got, four or five double-digit seeds win, but there was a cheerleader that stole the show.
Yeah.
That was so awesome. And the Andrew Catalan is the announcer, did a great job on the play-by-play. And it's so funny because he mentioned, hey, what about a cheerleader?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they're like, hey, how about you come over here? And if you don't know what happened, the basketball got stuck above the shot clock, way at the very top above the backboard. And no players can jump that high.
It's right in between, too. It's
like
right
between
your head
too.
If you jump
right.
that high.
John Morant might be able to jump that high, though. And so they brought out a chair, and then the ref was, like, standing on a chair with a mop or something, trying all of a sudden, like, hey, guess what? We got this cheerleader that stands on this guy's hands. And she went up there and able to grab the ball easily, and now she's a celebrity. Yeah. And, I mean, that's pretty doggone cool. That was pretty neat. And the call by the announcer, Andrew Catalan, on CBS was fantastic. Spot on.
Yeah, exactly. I saw she had a post on Instagram. Don't worry, guys. I got it.
Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty doggone cool. So what was the biggest surprise other than St. Peter's beating Kentucky? That's the obvious one. And honestly, I tell you what, I think St. Peter's beating Kentucky is a bigger upset than UMBC against Virginia. I know it's a 1 versus a 16.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, that's insane. That was the equivalent of a 16 beating a 1 yesterday. It really was.
Yeah. I don't know that I was really surprised by anything else. I didn't pick UConn to lose, obviously, but that
my biggest surprise was Carolina smoking
the margin. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely the biggest surprise, and maybe even St. Mary's the way they finished against Indiana too.
Yeah, of course, Indiana had to go all the way from Dayton to Portland.
They did, yeah, and so you never know how that's going to play out when you have to play that first four game, and then you get into this Texas Southern. Had to play a first four game too, and got beat pretty easily too. So, but yeah, I'd say North Carolina's margin of victory over Marquette was probably the biggest surprise for me as well.
Let's get back to KU. You know, KU wins 83-56. They cruised in this one. DeJuan Harris had a couple of threes, 12 points in 29 minutes. That's important because he's going to be left open to shoot some threes. He's going to have to knock a few down, I think, for KU to make that deep run. You know, McCormick's going to have to be efficient. I don't think he has to be a double-double machine. I don't think McCormick has to be a superstar, but I think he has to be solid. He's got to stay out of foul trouble, but he's going to have to finish at the rim. He's just got to be solid. And then Remy Martin brings a whole different addition to this offense, as I mentioned before. He provides energy. He also provides fun. I mean, he's just smiling a lot, enjoying himself, which he should, because this whole senior year has been basically messed up because of a bone bruise on his knee. And then Christian Brown started making threes last night. Jalen Wilson's foul trouble, that didn't seem to bother this team. Kansas does seem to be a team that's coming together. Now, when you look at the bracket for Kansas, and a lot of people said Kansas has the easiest path to the Final Four, or at least the Elite Eight, of any team in all of the tournament in regards to the one seeds. And I'll tell you something. When I saw Richmond was in the tournament, when the bracket came out, and I saw they were in the half with KU, I'd immediately flash back to 2011. In 2011, Kansas played Richmond, a double-digit seed. Uh-huh. They were a 12 seed, Richmond was, in 2011. That's the last time Richmond made it to the NCAA tournament. And Richmond made it to the Sweet 16. And in that tournament, KU played nobody higher than a 9 seed the whole tournament.
Yeah.
Seriously, they were a 1 seed in 2011. They beat the 16 seed Boston. And then they played the 9 seed in the second round. And then they played Richmond in the Sweet 16, which was a 12 seed. And then they played VCU.
The other school that was in the tournament from Richmond.
Right. Who was in the first four. Of course, Shaka Smart and VCU went all the way to the Final Four. The Elite Eight, VCU, 11 seed, and KU. So KU, everybody's talking. KU, people are getting tickets. Hey, I did too. I got tickets Final Four that year. After I knew they were going to play VCU, I was like, okay, so me and Rodney and a few people, we bought tickets. And then, at the end of the day, we were selling our tickets and lost some money per ticket.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to go when VCU made it. And VCU, I remember KU was 2 of 20 from three. Morningstar and Reed couldn't buy a bucket. The Morris twins were awesome against Richmond and they smoked Richmond. KU did in the Sweet 16. Everybody's like, okay, nice run VCU, but you ain't beating KU.
Yeah.
And KU, of course, floundered. And VCU hit some threes because they live by the three. And KU ended up losing in 2011, where the path was completely free and clear for them to roll to the Final Four. And that's why I said when this bracket came out, I don't like hearing people say KU's got this easy path. I heard that in 2011. And right now it does look like an easy path. Creighton's a 9 seed that's banged up. It looks like KU should win that game. I think Richmond's got a really good chance to beat Providence. And if history repeats itself, KU'd be playing a 12 seed in the Sweet 16. And then who knows who they're going to face in the Elite Eight. I don't think it's going to be Iowa State. That's the 11 seed, by the way. But, it could be maybe it's a Miami of Florida 10 seed. I mean, they're talented enough. And by the way, former Jayhawk Charlie Moore is their point guard. Did you know that?
I did.
Yeah, and he's bounced around a lot of different schools too. So when you look at the path to the Final Four, Kansas's path doesn't look that bad. And with Iowa losing, which obviously helps Kansas, and Richmond beat a 5 seed in 2011 to help Kansas. So it is interesting. The path to the Final Four is similar to 2011, at least thus far. And KU, right now, could be into the Elite Eight without playing anybody better than a 9 seed. I mean, the pass there for him.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I just – those are the things that you need to happen, right?
You don't need them to happen. If you're a one seed, you don't need that to happen.
Well, I mean, just to feel better about the path, right?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could play all the top seeds. I'm not saying need to happen.
Right. What I'm saying is it makes you feel more comfortable about your path, right?
Right.
Like what we're talking about right now, right, is Iowa losing the Big Ten champion, tournament champion, you know, losing in the first round to a 12 seed, and everybody thinking that might be the hottest team in the nation right now.
Yeah, and we don't know. KU could have easily beat Iowa.
And they could have, yeah. You just, it's a one-game deal, and, you know, Iowa didn't have it yesterday the way they needed to, and they got knocked out. So that's probably the same thing that happened to the 5 seed the year Richmond beat them in the tournament, and whoever they played, probably the 4 seed the next round. They just didn't have it that day. But Kansas had it that day when they played Richmond, but they didn't when they played VCU. So you just never know. I mean, the numbers don't really mean anything at this point, but it makes you feel a little bit better about your path when you do have those kind of matchups.
Oh, sure. Oh, it does make you feel better. But at the same time, it's like you're a one seed.
Oh,
you
yeah.
don't,
it's fast.
You don't need that.
Yeah.
Now, when you're a lower seed, you obviously it helps you. Like Murray State having Kentucky lose.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, K-State having UMBC
beat Virginia.
Ridiculously.
Oh, yeah.
Great for them.
No question. That they didn't need it to happen. Well, they kind of did need it to happen, more than likely. I'm going back to 2011, and I'm trying to find the bracket. There it is. KU played Illinois, a 9 seed, in the second round.
I couldn't remember who that second team
Richmond was. Knocked off Vanderbilt, a 5 seed. I remember Vanderbilt was a team that people thought KU would be scared of. But what happened that year was Richmond and Morehead State, a 12 and a 13, because Morehead State knocked off Louisville.
Okay.
So KU then got to play Richmond. And then VCU knocked off Georgetown, the 6 seed, and then the 3 seed Purdue. And then Florida State was a 10 and made it to the Sweet 16. And Florida State that year beat A&M the 7 and beat Notre Dame the 2. So
because now that I remember that was one of those years where KU actually knew
right
they're no matter what that they were going to be playing double digit seeds the rest of that bracket.
And you remember yesterday, and my friend Cody texted me and goes, "Oh, ha 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 ha, scared of the Hawkeyes." And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I drank the Kool-Aid. Shame on the Hawkeye fans for sucking me in. Okay, that's fine. I'm willing to sacrifice on Supreme Sacrifice Day. To burn up my bracket, that's fine. If that helps KU, I have no problem with it. But I did tell my friend Cody, I said, just remember, I told you that there's going to be a region that's going to get blown up. And I said, the Midwest is my prediction to be blown up. And I think in the back of the recesses of my mind, I must have been going back to 2011. Because I immediately remembered Richmond being in that part of the bracket. I remember KU playing VCU in the Elite Eight. And now I pull up the 2011 bracket. And in 2011, the four and the five lost in the first round, and the 2, 3, and 6 lost in the second round.
Yeah,
actually, the 6 lost in the first round. So back in 2011, you had the 4, 5, and 6 lost the first round, and you had the 3 and the 2 lose in the second round. And maybe that's why I said that this is a region I look at, and I see KU and Richmond in the same half, and I'm going, oh, yeah, this is going to blow up. And, you know, you look at the bracket now, and granted, the 12 and 13s didn't both lose in this situation. But still, Iowa goes down, all right? And if Richmond knocks off Providence, the 4-5 are gone. And LSU, Iowa State, I'm not like I'm going to freak out about LSU, a 6 seed, but that game could go either way today between LSU and Iowa State. Wisconsin could easily lose to Colgate, a 3 versus a 14. And everybody's talking about how Auburn has been struggling. 5 of the last 9 they've lost. I mean, it is conceivable, again, that Kansas could have this wide-open path, and I would warn KU fans, be careful, because you drank that Kool-Aid in 2011, and then Shaka Smart, the head coach of Marquette, who got rolled yesterday, by the way, by Carolina, Shaka Smart and VCU shocked the world and went to the Final Four and beat KU in the Elite Eight. So it does look like an easier path, but it doesn't guarantee anything.
Not at
for
all.
Sure. So the second-round matchups that we know of coming up on Saturday, it's Gonzaga and Memphis, which is going to be an interesting game. Memphis is super athletic, very talented, but younger. New Mexico State against Arkansas. I think New Mexico State can win that game, to be quite honest with you. Baylor, North Carolina. I think everybody's going to jump on the North Carolina Kool-Aid wagon.
It's already started.
It already has, because they scored 95 against Marquette. I think Baylor's going to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
St. Mary's, UCLA. That's a very interesting game, but I have UCLA going to Elite Eight. And then Murray State and St. Peter's. No, hardly anybody has St. Peter's in the second round, obviously. And then on the KU side, KU Creighton tomorrow at 1:40 pregame at 1 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake. Richmond Providence is the other matchup there in the second round in that pod. And then in the Western region, you've only got one second round matchup that's set, and it's a pretty interesting one. Michigan versus Tennessee, the Big Ten versus the SEC. So those are the games coming up tomorrow. Now the games for today, starting at 11:15. So everyone work hard the next hour 45 and then just, you know, do what everybody else did and stare at your computer screens at work.
Get that boss button, make sure it's in the right spot.
Or, you know, bend over, act like you're really checking out work stuff on your phone, even though you're watching you know what. Loyola Chicago against Ohio State. That's at 11:15 today. A lot of people like Loyola Chicago. People get caught up in what's happened in previous years, just like I did with Richmond back in 2011. But that's a tough first draw for Ohio State. Jacksonville State against Auburn, 11:40. What a way to kick off the day if Auburn loses for KU fans.
Yeah.
Montana State against Texas Tech at 12:45. That's on TNT. I have Tech in the Final Four. I'm sure they'll lose today. 1 o'clock, Yale versus Purdue. I think Purdue is always known to seem to choke in the tournament. This could be the possibility happening again against Yale. That's not going to be easy. Delaware, 15 against Villanova, the 2 at 1:45 on CBS. Miami, Florida against USC on True TV at 2:10. TNT at 3:15. Notre Dame against Alabama. Hey, that's a rematch of the college football playoff. Oh, wait a minute. That's basketball. Virginia Tech and Texas. You know, let me stop there for a second. A lot of people are picking it's Texas because Texas is Texas, and I understand it. However, Chris Beard is the head coach of Texas now.
Yeah.
And Virginia Tech, and this is one reason why I thought about not getting on the Iowa bandwagon, was that a lot of times you see teams make the win their conference tournament, and a lot of times a team that's not expected to win their conference tournament, and they play great ball, and everybody just jumps on going, they're peaking at the right time. And they go in the NCAA tournament, and they just flounder. And in some years, KU loses in the semis, and I'm like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because they get extra rest. And that's what Brad Underwood said at Illinois. He's like, well, you know, we lost. We wanted to win the tournament, but we lost. Now we have more time to rest up and be ready for the tournament. And granted, in 2008, KU won the Big 12 tournament, and they won like 17, 18 in a row, or whatever it was, in the year. So there's exceptions to every rule. But it seems like, for the most part, teams that are especially underdogs or teams that aren't the top seed that win their conference tournament that are rolling, they just don't carry it through into the NCAA tournament. And Iowa didn't do it yesterday. And now Virginia Tech, I think, is a chic pick by many, including myself, on my own bracket, to beat Texas. Virginia Tech, high and mighty from the standpoint that they beat Duke in ACC tournament championship game. Perhaps we're giving Virginia Tech too much credit. Or maybe we're absolutely dead on. Texas is going to flounder like they usually do.
I picked Texas to win today. I picked Richmond to win yesterday for basically the reason you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Is because everybody's riding high on these teams because of what they did in their conference
right.
tournament. UConn, I think it was 2011, that same year we were talking about KU losing mm-hmm. to BCU. That's the only team I can remember that went on that run.
Yeah, they got
in the Big East tournament, got hot, and then just kept it rolling through the entire NCAA tournament, won a title.
Yep.
And so that you don't.
UConn had to play. They had to play four games in 4 days, I think, in the Big East tournament.
Absolutely. Four and one
or
of them went into some overtime.
Was
I'm
that the six
sure.
overtime game against Syracuse
that
year?
It might have been that year too. Yeah. I can't remember if that was the same year that happened, the overtime thing. But yeah, they had to rule off like. I'm pretty sure it was four games in 4 days to get to win the Big East, and then they went in and won, obviously, six in the NCAA tournament.
Was that the Kemba Walker year?
I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, I was thinking it was. I mean, there's a couple of years where UConn won the national title and they got hot at the right time. They were 32-9 that year. Let me see. I'm going to pull it up
here. Yeah, it was Kemba Walker would have been. 20.
Big East. Okay, that was not the year. Well, it says Syracuse in overtime. Doesn't say six overtimes or four overtimes, whatever it was. Might have been a different year, but they had, let's see. They played 1, 2, 3, 4. They did. 5 games in 5 days. I thought it was five. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And then I just saw the 11-game run that immortalized Kemba Walker.
Yeah, they beat DePaul, Georgetown, Pitt by 2, Syracuse by 5, Louisville by 3, and then they beat Bucknell. They beat Cincinnati. They beat San Diego State. They edged Arizona. And that made it to the Final Four. They beat Kentucky by 1, and they beat Butler for the national championship game, which was not a good national championship game, by the way. It was 53-41. It was very, very ugly. Let me see if I can find the recap of this.
That's why like you look at that. They finished 32-9. At one point, you're 21-9.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
11 in a row later, you're just
they got on a roll. World. So sometimes
that's
it does
the, that's
carry
the only
over.
One. That, but that what I'm saying is like that's the only one that comes right to my mind, right? That actually did do that.
Right.
That had that kind of run in their conference tournament and then kept it alive. Yeah, oh, it just doesn't. Just doesn't happen with some of those teams that.
No.
Now, if it's a Kansas number one seed, they roll through and win their conference
like
tournament like they did this year. In 08, too, yeah. And like they do this year, right? And if they go and.
But they're playing three games in 3 days, too.
And yeah.
Because Virginia Tech had to play four games.
Yeah, they've got a bye that they have in the first part of the conference tournament that they can relax.
Right.
They don't have to win as many games, exert as much energy just to keep their season alive.
I will say something that Virginia Tech and Iowa, how they're very much different. And now that I really think about it, Iowa played the Big Ten tournament championship game on Sunday.
They did.
And
yeah.
then they turn around and play on Thursday. Whereas Virginia Tech finished on Saturday, and then they end up playing on a Friday. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Huge difference. And Syracuse and Connecticut that year in 2011 in the Big East tournament, Madison Square Garden, that was a single overtime game. 2 years prior, it was the six overtime game.
I knew like one of those games for UConn at least went into overtime in the in the Big East.
So I remember banks are working pretty good, you know? I mean, I remember Richmond as a 12 back in 2011 and VCU as 11, and you're sitting here remembering, you know, UConn making a run all the way to the national championship and got hot. But I think you're right. That's one of the exceptions to the rule.
Yeah.
With all I mean,
this just doesn't happen a lot.
No, it doesn't. Continuing today, 5:50 tonight, Chattanooga against Illinois. If you're a K-State fan and you want Brad Underwood to be your head coach, you should be cheering hard for Chattanooga. I do think
they lost,
Chattanooga.
They lost four of their last five games going into the Big East tournament, too. Sorry. I'm looking at UConn's schedule there.
Yeah.
Of their regular season, they lost four of the last five.
Of their regular season that year.
Yeah, reeled off 11 in a row. Sorry, go ahead.
Turn the switch on the right time. Chattanooga, if Chattanooga beats Illinois today, there are going to be a lot more people saying Brad Underwood, they're tired of him already.
Oh, yeah.
At Illinois. They're paying him a lot of money not to lose in the first round.
Yeah.
And on top of the comment of, well, we lost first round of the Big Ten tournament. Well, you know, that gives them more time to prepare for the tournament. And you have more time to prepare a tournament. You lose a 13 seed.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what, Brad Underwood may say, you know what, K-State, this is my time to go. And I'll be loved by everybody. I think if Illinois loses the first round game today, that enhances the chances of K-State to get Brad Underwood. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No.
Okay, good. I've been crazy.
I don't think that at all.
Okay. Cal State Fullerton against Duke tonight.
I don't think you're crazy.
Okay, thanks. Cal State Fullerton and Duke tonight at 6:10. Duke a 2, Cal State Fullerton a 15. Iowa State at 11 against LSU a 6 at 6:20 on TBS tonight. Wright State a 16 versus Arizona a 1 on True TV at 6:27 this evening. The late games, 8:20, it's UAB against number 5 Houston. Look out, Houston, two of the five seeds have already lost. Davidson the 10 versus 7 Michigan State. That's an intriguing matchup, 8:40 on CBS. And Colgate, the 14, takes on the 3-seed Wisconsin, 8:50. And the final game tonight at 8:57 on True TV, it is TCU versus Seton Hall. And that's a game I don't even remember what I picked. That's one of those where you just might as well get a coin out and flip it. And then on Saturday, North Carolina-Baylor play 11:10. Creighton-Kansas, the second game on the docket at 1:40. Michigan-Tennessee at 4:15. Richmond-Providence at 5:10. St. Mary's-UCLA at 6:10 on Saturday. St. Peter's and Murray State at 6:45. 7:40, New Mexico State and Arkansas, and then 8:40 on Saturday night, the last game of the day, it's Memphis versus Gonzaga. So, by the way, so Bill Self gets a lot of a heat from people, and I talked about this with Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks yesterday. Isn't it a backhanded compliment to Bill Self? Like, some people rank the best coaches in the NCAA tournament. And there are a couple coaches that were ranked ahead of Bill Self on the NCAA tournament list that have not won a national title.
Uh-huh.
And Bill Self has. And I looked at a few of those coaches, and I'm like, well, but they don't get 9 number one seeds like Bill Self has.
Yeah.
They have years where they get seeded 7, 8, or 9 or whatever the case may be. You know, Tom Izzo has made a Final Four with teams that are seeded lower. Tom Izzo was ranked ahead of Bill Self on one person's list, which I'm not going to say that's right or wrong. I don't know for sure. I know Tom Izzo, he's only won one national title back in 2000. Tom Izzo's made more Final Fours. That is true. And he's made more Final Fours in regards to lower seeds. But yet, every single year that Bill Self's been head coach at Kansas, they've been no worse than a 4 seed, which means they're one of the top 16 teams at the end of the year every single year, not one single time. Has Bill Self had a team worse than 16th in the country based on that seeding formula? And 9 times he's had the number one seed, including this year. And so we talk about how you're number one seed 8 times so far under Bill Self. You made a Final Four only 2 times. That's not a very good percentage. It should be better. It should be by at least 50-50. But it's not. So everybody points to people that want to knock Bill Self, and obviously K-State fans are some of those people, that, well, Bill Self lost to Bucknell and he lost to Bradley. Well, those are two of his first few years with the Jayhawks. That hasn't happened much anymore. He lost to Northern Iowa second round. Okay, that was an eight or a nine, I think it was. It was a 9 seed they lost to that year, and that was a bad upset. It happens. But here's the thing. Here's my point. If people point to all the disappointment. You know, VCU was the Elite Eight game. Like, they didn't lose in the first round of VCU.
Yeah.
The VCU game was the Elite Eight. You know, they lost to Oregon in Kansas City. Oregon was the 2 seed and Kansas was the 1 seed, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be a gigantic upset. I mean, granted, it was in KC with KU fans. KU was the Elite Eight as a 1 seed, but they had to play in L.A. the year before they won the national title against UCLA, the 2 seed. And everybody said UCLA was the de facto number 1 seed. It's just that they put them as a 2, but they let them stay at home. And Kansas lost in their backyard in the Elite Eight. And then the next year, they won it all. So you look at some of the losses that Kansas has had, and you sit here and you got to say, really, the worst losses that Bill Self has had, it's been a while.
Yeah.
I mean, VCU, you can sit here and go
15 straight first-round wins.
Right.
You heard it on the cut, right?
Right. That helps me because what I'm trying to say here is, and I saw the list, and I don't know if I can find it again, but Bill Self as a 1 seed has never lost in the first round.
Yeah.
Only one team's ever done that. That's Virginia. There have now been 10 teams in NCAA tournament history as a 2 seed. That have lost to a 15.
Yeah.
Bill Self has never done that.
Yeah.
He's never lost to a 15. Bill Self has lost as a 3 one time. Okay. I can't remember if it, I think it was Bucknell.
Was
it was Bucknell.
Bucknell.
He was a 4 against Bradley.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the two worst first round losses for Bill Self at KU. Now, has he lost in other tournament games in where he's been the higher seed? Yes. We'd already established that. Obviously, a VCU one stands out, Northern Iowa. But the point I'm trying to make here is John Calipari is considered a Hall of Fame coach, right?
Yeah, he is a Hall of Fame coach.
Okay, no, he is, right. John Calipari has not John Calipari has had year. Last year they didn't make the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's had years where they were in the NIT and lost to Robert Morris at Kentucky. Mike Krzyzewski's had years where they haven't been a top 4 seed. Tom Izzo's had low seeds. Roy Williams, I mean, he'd go kind of like we did at KU, did the same thing in North Carolina. He'd be a 1 seed for 2 years, and he'd be a 7, 8, 9 seed the next year or two. Do you know that there are 10 teams that have lost as 2 seeds to 15 seeds in NCAA history? And do you know that three of the coaches of those 10, and there's 4, but I can remember 3 on the list. Do you know that Mike Krzyzewski as a 2 seed has lost to a 15 in Lehigh? Yeah. Do you know John Calipari as a 2 seed now has lost to a 15 seed in St. Peter's? Do you know Tom Izzo as Michigan State just lost 6 years ago to Middle Tennessee State a 15 seed in the first round? So all this knock on Bill Self is, well, Bill Self can't get to the Final Four as much as he should. He hasn't won as many national titles as he should. And that's probably true. Even Bill Self would probably tell you that. However, coaches that are considered to be greater than Bill Self have lost to 15 seeds, including the almighty one, Mike Krzyzewski. Bill Self's never had that.
Yeah, I mean, that part of the resume is definitely impressive, to not be able to not be upset in those kind of games when 3 of those guys have, right? Tom Izzo's the only one that would be on that list above Bill Self that you'd be like, I don't know about that. But, again, he does have more Final Fours. And so all that stuff's going into play, right?
Sure.
But, yeah, that part of it is obviously pretty impressive to be able to do that. And again, like, KU's got the most consecutive first-round wins in the tournament of anybody, right?
Right.
And so they're not losing in the first round. Now, it is a knock that's just not there anymore from that aspect of it for KU.
Sure.
And for Bill Self.
Absolutely. I don't know why that doesn't go back further. Let me see if I can find it. 'Cause I want to pull this up and present the facts here, because I don't want to have my memory distort what I'm trying to accomplish here. But I want to go back to KU's tournament history here, if I can find it. I want to pull it up for people. Okay, here we go. Okay, there we go. So Bill Self took over in 2004, all right? So Bill Self in 2004 with Roy Williams players, and I know because I was at the Elite Eight, that was a team that overachieved a little bit. And if Keith Langford doesn't get in foul trouble and foul out against Georgia Tech, I think KU wins that game in St. Louis. I was there to watch it, witness it. KU was a four seed, and they made it to the Elite Eight. Okay, so keep track of the Elite Eights, okay? So as a four seed, he made the Elite Eight his first year. It wasn't even his team. Then the two bad years, 05 and 06. Remember, that was when Brandon Rush and Mario Chalmers and Julian Wright, they were young. They were talented, but they weren't experienced. And I remember they couldn't even hold on to the ball against Ball State and Maui one year. So they lost in the first round to Bucknell by one. They were a three, okay? And they lost the very next year in 06 as a four to Bradley. Now, those are the two worst losses Bill Self has had in the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
That was 16 years ago. That was 16 years ago. So people talk – I hear so many people say, well, KU flames out in the tournament. That's not really as true as people make it out to be. I mean, if you want to say they flame out in the tournament because they don't make the Final Four, I guess that's true. But if you're going to say they flame out like they get upset all the time, that's not necessarily true. In 2007, they were the one seed and lost in the Elite Eight to UCLA. So in his first 4 years, he went to the Elite Eight twice, right?
Yes.
And he lost in LA to UCLA in their backyard. The very next year, he won a national title. So we know he made the Elite Eight in 08. He won it all. Yes. In 09, they were a three seed, and they lost in the Sweet 16 to a two seed. And that was a team that was built around Collins and Aldridge, and that's all they had. And they nearly beat Michigan State as a three seed. That team did exactly what it was supposed to do and almost moved on to the Elite Eight. That was a team that wasn't supposed to make the Elite Eight. They went to the Sweet 16. They performed based on their seed, right?
Yes.
No shame in that. 2010 is probably the worst loss, even though it wasn't a first-round loss, because that team was the number one overall seed. That had Collins and Aldridge. That team and Tyshawn Taylor, that was a team that should have gone farther, no doubt. And they lost the second round to Northern Iowa. Okay, that was a number nine, and KU was number one. That's the worst loss to me that he's had. In 2011, they made the Elite Eight again, and they lost to VCU. And people will say, well, there you go, KU flamed out in the Elite Eight. Well, so did every other top seed in that region. They didn't even get there.
Yeah.
2012, they made it to the national title game, another Elite Eight. Are you keeping track of these?
Yeah.
In 2012, they were a two seed, and they went to the national title game and lost to Kentucky, who was full of first-round draft picks, including the number one pick, Anthony Davis. I was there to watch that. There's no way KU should have been hanging with Kentucky. They were clearly the better team. KU made a rally, made it interesting at the end. In 2013, they were a number one seed. They lost in the Sweet 16 to Michigan, and that was a Trey Burke 26-foot heave that tied the game and sent overtime. Elijah Johnson, got tight on some free throws. And Bill Self said, we should have fouled. Michigan went on to the national championship game that year.
Yeah.
So there's not like a ton of shame in that, okay? In 2014, they were a two seed, and they lost in the, they say third round, but it was a second round. And that was Joel Embiid's year where he didn't play in the tournament. He was hurt. And KU lost to Stanford.
Yeah.
Okay? So, I guess you can call that a flame out. They still should have beat Stanford. In 2015, they lost to Wichita State. Now, we know Wichita State was good during that time. And they got after it. And KU had Kelly Oubre, who wasn't going to dive on the floor because he was worried about his NBA draft lottery status. I saw that in person as well. That was a KU as a two seed against Wichita State. So there's back-to-back years, 14 and 15, that are what? Not living up to expectations. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Okay, so through the first 11 years of Bill Self's tenure at KU, four of the 11, you could say, okay, they lost when they shouldn't have. You could, well, maybe five with Northern Iowa in the second round. Now, let's move up. Let's talk about recent stuff. In 2016, so we're going 6 years ago, they made the Elite Eight as a one and lost to a two, and there's no shame in losing to a two in the Elite Eight. In ones and twos, there's not much of a difference. They lost to Villanova, and that was a game where Devontae Graham got in some phantom foul trouble. I remember that as well. And they lost to Villanova, and Villanova won it all in 16, if I remember correctly. So
yeah.
they lost the eventual national champion. That was the Elite Eight again. 2017, they make the Elite Eight again. Then that was a game where Devontae Graham goes 0 for 10, couldn't make a shot. Josh Jackson got two fouls in the first few minutes of the game. And KU, I'm not trying to make excuses. Those are the facts. And KU lost to Oregon. And you shouldn't lose in KC in front of a whole bunch of people. Oregon was a three seed, but they had NBA talent. They had Dylan Brooks. And who was the other guard they had that was really good that went to the NBA? They had two guards that were really good. But they were athletic. They were a good team. And they were a three seed. 2018, KU made it to the Final Four as a one seed. beat Duke in a regional final in Omaha, and then they lost to number one seed Villanova. No shame in that. Final Four. I was there in San Antonio. They got lit up like a Christmas tree. It was a bad matchup, but they made it to another Elite Eight in 18, made a Final Four. 2019 was the worst seed that Bill Self has had at KU. He's had a few four seeds, not very many, three, I think. And in 2019, they lost to Auburn. A four versus a five, that's a coin flip game.
That's second round, yeah.
Okay, so that's not the end of the world. And Auburn was red hot. And in 2020, they would have been a one seed. I mean, you would think they would have made it the Elite Eight, but we don't know. But they would have been the number one overall seed. Okay, last year they were a three seed, and everybody knew they're overseeded, and they got blown out of the water against USC. To me, we could see that one coming. It was a horrible matchup. And now this year they're a one seed, and they're going into the second round. So, granted, Bill Self has only been to three Final Fours at KU, and he should be to more. And granted, he has one national title win, and he has a one national championship loss. Okay? At KU, with that many number one seeds, you should have more Final Four appearances, you should have more national championship game appearances, and you should have more national championships. I think nobody will disagree with any of that. How many Elite Eights did we count up?
There was three, four, five, eight.
Okay, so Bill Self, let's add this up as well. So 04, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. This is 18th NCAA tournament. So he's had 17 because there was no tournament in 2020.
Yeah.
So 17 prior tournaments, Bill Self's been the Elite Eight how many times?
Eight.
So think about this for a second. This is what people tend to, the hardest game to win is the Elite Eight game.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. So Bill Self in his tenure at KU, he's been the Elite Eight half the time. Think about that for a second. 8 out of 17 years, almost 50% of the time, Bill Self has been to the Elite Eight, the regional final. 8 times in 17 years. That's pretty damn good. He's 3-5 in the Elite Eight, which, let's be honest, the law of averages are you'd be 4-4. So he's not that far behind on the averages. If he goes to the Elite Eight and wins it, goes to the Final Four this year, he's 4-5 in Elite Eights. That's not horrible. It's not horrible. It really isn't.
Yeah.
Now, how many of those where he was a one seed? You know, obviously VCU one's the one that really sits in your craw because that was 11 you lost to. But many times in regional final, KU's lost to a two seed. Many times. Or the eventual national champion. So, all this talk about Final Fours and national championships, which is warranted. It's fair talk. We focus on that. And we overlook that Bill Self, every other year, goes to the Elite Eight. He's one of the eight best teams in the country in a winner-take-all elimination single-game elimination tournament that doesn't bode well for favorites. Listen, if you're good enough long enough, you're going to get upset in this tournament. We just saw it yesterday with Kentucky. We've seen it with Duke. We've seen Michigan State lose as a two. I mean, those are great coaches I just told you about. Hall of Fame coaches that have lost as a two to a 15. Bill Self's never done that. He has lost as a three to a 14 one time. He lost as a 4 to a 13 one time. Okay? It happens to every coach. It absolutely does. Bob Knight lost to, wasn't Indiana, did they, who was it? Syracuse lost to Richmond, and Indiana lost to, it was a big time. Was that Richmond? Indiana, Bob Knight got upset by a major upset back in the day. What I'm trying to say is the greatest coaches, they lose to teams they shouldn't at times. How many Elite Eights has Mike Krzyzewski, Tom Izzo, and John Calipari been to since Bill Self took over at Kansas? I don't know. We'd have to look it up. Maybe it's very comparable, very close. But I can tell you this. Who doesn't want a coach that makes the Elite Eight every other year? I know K-State would take it.
Absolutely.
I think everybody in the Big 12 would take it. I think everybody in the country would take it. All right, now, one out of every 6 years making the Final Four. Now, you know, probably should be better than that considering the one seeds he gets. And he's been a two national title games, so one every decade. You want to go to the title game more than just once a decade, and that's about his average there. So that's where the argument goes against Bill Self isn't as good as these other guys because he hasn't won as many of those games. Like if Bill Self is 5-3 in the Elite Eight, that means he has five Final Four appearances, and odds are two more Final Fours, he maybe has a national title. Isn't the narrative completely different? National titles, five Final Fours. Think about this for a second. Their Elite Eight losses. Let me go back here and find a couple of them. Villanova went on to win the national title in 16. If KU wins that Elite Eight game, who's to say they don't win at all? And, of course, the VCU game, you could just point to two of them. Oregon and Kansas City, that's a game they should have won in KC with everybody behind them, right? Home game, home away from home. And VCU was 11 seed. Those are the two Elite Eight games I look at out of the five that Bill Self has lost, and I say, you know what? Those are the two they should have won. Because I go back to 2004, Georgia Tech, honestly, that was a coin flip game. They lost in overtime, and they were the lower seed. They were the one seed against the two seed USA in 07. They played in their backyard. Those are basically 2-1 seeds. Okay, and they got beat. They just weren't the, they weren't the better team. They never made Elite Eight in 2010. That was when they lost Northern Iowa in the second round. Michigan went on the national title game in 13. They lost to them in the Sweet 16. If KU wins there, they probably get to another. Well, if they do, they're another Elite Eight right there. I mean, think about that for a second. If they don't have a Trey Burke three-pointer go down against them late in that game, that's 9 Elite Eights in 17 years for Bill Self.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second. And Michigan went on the national title game. You could argue KU could have made it just as far. So if you just simply flip the results of the Oregon Elite Eight game in KC that they should have won and the VCU game in Elite Eight, Bill Self is 5-3 in Elite Eights, 8 Elite Eights in 17 years at KU, and he would have 5 Final Four appearances and I would imagine probably one more national title game appearance, maybe another national title. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Just simply two games in his 17 years in the tournament could change the whole narrative. Instead, people keep saying, well, Tom Izzo is a better coach than Bill Self, and these guys are better coaches. Mark Few is a better coach than Bill Self. He's never won a title. And you know why they say that? Because Bill Self is the model of consistency. 9 number one seeds. Gonzaga can't say it. Krzyzewski can't say it. Izzo can't say it. Calipari can't say it. And so what happens is Bill Self creates these not unreal. They're realistic expectations in regards to if you're a one, you're expected to go to Final Four. And I think it's fair criticism. But at the same time, Bill Self's the only coach that's put him in that category to be criticized because he's got 9 number one seeds in 17 years or 18 years. That's why people, it's funny, it's a backhanded compliment. You're ripping Bill Self for not winning enough, but yet he wins more than anybody else. He won 14 straight conference titles. He wins the conference title again this year after Baylor won the national championship a year ago. He's got another number one seed. And he's been to 8 Elite Eights in 17 years, and people want to knock him for not making it to the Final Four as much or winning more championships, which, once again, I say is warranted. But it's not like he's losing the first and second round every year.
Yeah.
Whereas Duke and Michigan State and now Kentucky have lost to big-time inferior opponents as two seeds.
Yeah. It's crazy. I actually did the research while you're talking about like Izzo and Coach K and Coach Cal. What do they have, like Elite Eights since Bill Self's been at Kansas?
Right, 04 on.
Izzo doesn't count the national championship in 2000 during this time period.
Right.
So Cal's the only one that's been to more Elite Eights.
Okay.
9.
He's been 9.
9 Elite Eights, 4 Final Fours, and a title.
And see, then, he's been to more Final Fours, but he has just as many titles as Bill Self
many
does.
Titles, yeah. And then Izzo has 6 Elite Eights, 5 Final Fours.
Uh-huh.
But has never won a championship.
So see, he's 5-1 in Elite Eight.
09 was the best finish they had.
But there you go. He's 5-1 in Elite Eight games, so he's considered better. Of course, he has a title in 2000.
Yeah, and then Coach K's got the best percentage of all that. He's got 6 Elite Eights, 4 Final Fours, and 2 titles.
Right.
So it's
4-2 in Elite Eight.
Yeah. So you go down one rung.
Sure.
On each of those, you can double up whatever
sure.
you know.
So
6-4-2, and so.
So the problem for Bill Self is he's gotten to more Elite Eights than those guys, or about the same. He just hasn't won as many of the regional finals.
To get to Final Four, yeah.
But if you change that, like I said,
so 3 Final Fours is the lowest of all those guys. Like,
right,
like
but if he now keep your numbers in front of you.
Yeah.
So if they do beat Oregon at home when they're supposed to, and they beat VCU, which they should have done, an 11 seed. Where does that put him then with the rest of the guys? You just make it to where he has 5 Final Fours.
One over Cal with 10 Elite Eights.
Yeah. He'd have the most Elite Eight.
Yeah,
5 Final Fours.
They've already made the Elite Eight there. Yeah, so yeah, it'd be 5 Final Fours, and they'd put him above everybody but Izzo as far as Final Fours. They'd be tied.
Wow. So, see, it's a thin
margin.
It is a
thin line. It's funny because I think
people act like he hasn't won big games in the tournament.
Yeah, but then in the same side, people kind of get caught in a different side of the argument or whatever. I saw somebody last night kind of saying, hey, this is KU, you know, they'll win here and they'll probably lose in the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight. And And so it didn't quite often for KU. And somebody came back in this tournament, it seems to happen quite often, is what they said. Somebody came out with a graphic that said in the last 20 years, Kansas has won the most NCAA tournament games at 50. And I'm like, okay, they've made every single one of those tournaments. If you divide 50 by 20 seasons.
Right, 2.5 wins a tournament.
That's 2.5 wins a tournament.
Should be more.
And that's where what we're talking about on the back end comes in, right?
Right.
Of he's had the success of getting his team where they need to go.
Right.
But they've not been able to finish with the top prize, and their average elimination is the Sweet 16. And so, you know, that's their average of getting where they want. And if that graphic is correct, that they've had 50 wins in the last 20 NCAA tournaments, then that's
But that doesn't count counting. Bill Self, though. Bill Self has 40.
Yeah, that's counting.
So 40 over 17 the years. Well, that's about 2.5, too. Well, but see, one of the problems you got to remember, you got no 2020. There is no tournament there. So that's going to bring down the average a little bit. You didn't play a tournament. So you actually got to count
that's 20 tournament. It's not the years. It's 20 NCAA tournaments. So that tournament didn't happen.
Well, what I'm saying is Bill Self hasn't even coached in 20 NCAA tournaments.
Yeah, yeah. But what, yeah. KU. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So it's misleading from that standpoint.
But that part of it, yeah.
Because
that would go down, actually, because you think about the years prior.
Right, 2003 and 2, they made a Final Four.
They made it to the Final Four and won a year to the National Championship.
And that's KU fan putting that out there, I'm sure.
Yeah. And a KU fan was trying to justify that, no, they don't always get beat out early in the tournament or flame out or whatever. They don't, but they don't get a bit. But the point was that, like, 33. The KU fan that puts that out is trying to say that his tournament runs are actually longer than you think when they're really not.
They're not. No.
On average.
No,
again.
Right.
And that's where the criticism comes in is what I'm talking about.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah, I mean, you're taking away, and if you really think about it, you're taking away 9 wins at least from that 50 if you're talking about the last 20 NCAA tournaments.
Bill Self's
that's
40.
Just the graphic that I saw there.
Bill Self's 40 and 16 in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about 68% winning percentage. As a one seed, it probably should be higher.
Yeah.
It should be. Here's the thing. You're always going to end with a loss unless you win
exactly.
a national
you're
title.
So you said you're 40 and 16. 16 means you just didn't win the national title. Everybody's going to have that kind of loss unless you are hoisting the trophy up.
Right. This is 18.
So the
tournament.
Amount of wins is impressive there.
Sure.
But then it kind of takes down what you're actually trying to argue that, no, KU doesn't get beat out.
Which it's interesting we do the math on that. Like, that comes out to about 2.5 wins a tournament, but yet they've made 8 Elite Eights, which means that they win 3 every one of those years. And they don't lose in the first round anymore.
Yeah.
It doesn't really add up when you do the math.
On a long-term thing, though, you're not winning a single game 2 of those years in the tournament.
Well, true.
You know, and so that hurts the projection of getting more wins onto your total there.
Right.
And then you're only winning 2 games, 1-2-3, or 1 game, excuse me, 1-3 times. So,
right. But you've also been to the Final Four 3 times.
Exactly.
Stretch, and you got 4 wins each of those years. And 1 year you got 6, and another you have 5.
Yeah. Because the number does seem low, right?
Yeah.
For amount of wins they should have, and even Bill Self should have.
Yeah, right.
And where they're eliminated in the tournament seems low.
No doubt.
But, yeah, it's just kind of the way it is. You can use that. That's like all the numbers they use for LeBron, right?
Sure.
Well, he did that in a ton more games than somebody else did right?
Well, he's been to 10 finals. Yeah, but he's only won 4 titles.
Yeah.
Well, 4 titles is still pretty impressive, but it's not as good as Jordan. Jordan won 6 out of 6 tries, and he's batting 1,000, and LeBron's batting 400. 4 out of 10, or 4 out of 6, but you divide that 4 out of 10. I think what we're trying to say here, to summarize, is that Bill Self simply needs to win more Elite Eight games.
For the legacy part of it, for sure.
Honestly.
Right? Yeah.
Because he can get them there quite a bit. And he talks about how that's the most pressure. And think about the Elite Eight game they won to win the national title. They had to beat Steph Curry and Davidson and played extremely tight the entire game and were lucky they won that game.
Yeah.
Sasha Kohn bailed them out that day. Then they were loose because they were lowest one. And like I've always said, when they go to the tournament and they go to the Final Four, Elite Eight, I'd rather almost have KU be the underdog, because when they're the favorite, they get super tight under Bill Self.
Yeah.
They really do. I mean, you think about, you know, making the national title game in 2008, they were a one seed, but they played so much looser once they knew they were the worst one out of the 4 ones. Had they played like a 6 seed, who knows what would have happened. And then in 2012, they were a bit of an underdog. They were Thomas Robinson, Jeff Withey, Tyshawn Taylor, Elijah Johnson. They didn't score a lot of points. That team was made out of defense. And they won. And think about that tournament run. In 2012, Kansas beat Purdue by three. They trailed most of the game. They trailed 11 seed in the Sweet 16, North Carolina State, most of the game, won by three. Then they played great against North Carolina, and Roy couldn't figure out a box and one, how to adjust to it. And then the Final Four game, I was there for that. They trailed most of the game, came back and won by two. I mean, that team, Ohio State, yeah. That team easily could have been out in the second round of Purdue.
Everybody should have been. Everybody thought their run was over when they were playing Purdue.
And they should have been.
Yeah.
So some years you win and you shouldn't, and some years you lose. Like, and then you turn around and you think back to 2013, the very next year, they should have never lost to Michigan in the Sweet 16. They controlled that game. So maybe it evens out. And over eight Elite Eight appearances, Bill Self's 3-5. And so, you know, the margin between 3-5 and 5-3 isn't very much.
Yeah.
It's like we talk about in the NFL. Being 8-8 and 10-6 isn't – there's not a lot of room there. It's very, very, very close. And that leads me back to the NCAA tournament. When you go by seedings and you say, well, 12 over 5, that's an upset. And it is in some cases. But when you look at the NCAA tournament, and this is why it's hard to pick games, and this is me making excuse for myself, but the tournament now, there is no dominant team like we've had some years. Last year, Gonzaga and Baylor clearly were the best teams in the country all year. This year, maybe Arizona and Gonzaga, but they're not nearly as dominant.
No.
But this year, I mean, honestly, and we just saw a 2-seed lose yesterday to St. Peter's. And Kentucky is considered a national title threat. At least I thought so. But you look at this tournament right now. You look at this tournament. I think, honestly, from the 4 to the 13 seed line, there's not a major difference.
No, I would agree with that.
There really isn't. From 4 to 13, there's not a major difference. I mean, Arkansas won by 4 over a 13. Providence won by 9, and that was tighter than 9 against a 13. So, UCLA was down 7 late in the game to Akron. That was a 4-13. So the difference between the 4 and the 13s isn't nearly what the seed line suggests. And now we're starting to see a few more 2s lose. So what I'm trying to tell you is the parity is growing wider to where we shouldn't be as surprised when, I don't think we're getting as surprised anymore that 4s lose the 13s and 5s lose the 12s all the time. So we don't even think about that as much. But there not a lot of 3s have lost to 14s. Okay, you did once. But I think even the 3s and 14s, that gap is narrowed. And you're clearly the 2 and 15. And all you got to do is go back just a few years ago, a 16 beat a 1.
Yeah.
So the parity, when you look at the seed lines and you go, oh, dear Lord, UCLA's a 4 and Akron's a 13, that'll be a blowout. That's the way it used to be. It's not that way anymore. If you're honestly, unless you're a number one seed, it used to be you're a 1 or a 2, it's automatic, you're moving on.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty much you're a 1, you're automatic. But a 2, every 4 or 5 years. I mean, this is the second straight year a 2's lost to a 15.
Yeah.
And the last one before that was 6 years ago when Michigan State lost to Middle Tennessee State. So 3 times in the last 7 years a 15's beaten a 2. Yeah. So now we got to start sitting here going, the gap between a 2 and a 15 isn't that big.
The 2 points away from making the Elite Eight last year.
That's right.
Oral Roberts nearly beat Arkansas.
Right.
Should have probably. Who knows? I mean.
So the gap is not as wide as a seed line suggests.
Yeah.
And that's why it makes it harder to pick these brackets.
Yeah,
and I think it's great for college basketball, but it's bad for the favorites.
Yeah.
It's bad for Kentucky. It's bad for UCLA. It's bad for Kansas. It's bad for Duke. It's bad. And the thing is, these little guys never get a shot at the big guys unless they get the chance in the tournament. And that's why in college football, and I know this is a whole different topic, and I know college football is different. It's a different sport. It's more physical. I get it. But this is why college football needs to expand the playoff. I keep hearing, well, it doesn't matter. You still have the same two teams at the end of the day. Well, if we had the same thing that we did in basketball, we'd probably think the same thing in basketball, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Like, expand the playoff and let the little guy have a shot at Alabama. And maybe they get their doors blown off. So be it. Hey, you know what? Texas Southern had a chance to play KU. They got rolled. So what? At least they had opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference between Alabama rolling Notre Dame and Alabama playing somebody else that, is a 12, a 16 seed in a football playoff? At least they'd have a chance.
Yeah.
And can you imagine if, a 14 seed in the football playoffs beats Georgia, the 3 seed. I mean, and you can't argue, well, we don't care because it's not a key bowl game. You wouldn't have that excuse anymore for the SEC.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where football continues to miss. And it very well could be that there's only 2 great teams or programs or 4, and it doesn't make a big difference. But I'm going to tell you something. after the first two or three teams in college football, typically there's a lot of parity. There would be upsets, and it would be great for college football. And I don't understand why they keep fighting it. I really, truly don't. There'd be more money for everyone. I mean everyone. And I still don't understand it. College basketball, the NCAA tournament, there really is nothing to change. This is perfect. It's almost perfect. You know, I would still like to see the 16s not play each other in a play-in game. I think, you know, you get in, you get in. But I would like to see the last four that make the tournament, or last eight that make the tournament, those eight play each other in the four play-in games. That's what I like to see.
Yeah.
You're the last ones at large. You didn't get automatic bids. If you get an automatic bid, you're automatically in the 64-team field.
Yeah.
You're the last at large, like Indiana and Wyoming and whoever. Richmond, too. They were one of the last ones in. Well, they're automatic bid, actually. But whoever the last eight at-larges are, they should be seated or whatever, place them, and they play each other in the first four. That would be about the only change I would make. Other than that, this is awesome. Because you have St. Peter's knock off Kentucky. You have Kansas lose to Northern Iowa. You have Duke lose to Lehigh. You have Virginia lose to UMBC. This would never, ever happen in college football. It doesn't. It's not allowed to happen.
Yeah. Now, I'm a fan of a lot of things and a lot of sports. Obviously, you are too. These 2 days are my favorite days of the year.
I agreed.
In anything that's involved in sports.
Agreed.
Thursday and Friday.
Yep.
Saturday and Sunday are fun, but they're spaced out a little more, so it's not that frantic, like, oh, this team lost, let's get to this game now and watch it. And you know, it's spaced a little more because there's less games, obviously. There's only 8 games each day instead of 16. But, you know, you're looking at these 2 days, and I can't think of anything else that I want to be watching all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, NBA playoffs aren't like that. Like, it's a best of 7 series. Like, I'll catch it when I catch it. I'll start watching at the end of the third quarter.
Big deal. They're down 0-2 in the series.
Yeah.
They'll come back.
I mean, they can come back and win, and nothing's set in stone on one, just having one bad day.
Right.
And, or, you know, one shining moment like they talk about, right?
Sure.
And have that moment in one of these 2 days is just unreal because it's just frantic and everything's there. And like I said, I mean, now I enjoyed watching the Chiefs win the Super Bowl probably more than these 2 days. Don't get me wrong, but the excitement of anticipation and what goes on during these 2 days is unmatched for me.
I agree with you. And I tell you, honestly, when the Elite Eight games are over, actually, really, honestly, after the Sweet 16 games are over, we would get through this week. When we get done with Sunday, the tournament, like, if your team's still alive, it's still exciting. But to me, this is the 4 days.
Yeah.
You say two, I'll go with four. I like the first two, awesome, but the next two are great too. But once we get through these 4 days, it's like you give me a whole bunch of ice cream and I gorge on it, and all of a sudden you take it away until next Thursday, and now all I got is not as many games.
Yeah, you got 2 games each night.
Yeah,
and then
right.
It's like, you know, what do we get? 4, I guess, in the Sweet 16, but
right,
it's just not as fun. But this is the pinnacle of.
And they're games all day long.
Exactly.
And you have an excuse
I don't like the KU game tipping off as late as it did last night.
Oh, no, me neither.
But I think we need to do something about the timing. But you'd have to start it like
– yeah.
If you want to stagger like they do, you'd have to start at like 9 o'clock in the morning if you really wanted it right time-wise at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, NCAA Women's Tournament. KU women will play number 9 Georgia Tech tonight at 6:30 in Stanford. K-State women will play. They're a 9 seed against Washington State, the 8 seed against former K-State coaches at 10:30 tomorrow morning in Raleigh, North Carolina. Nebraska women are an 8 seed, and they'll take on Gonzaga. That'll be at 1:30 today in the women's tournament in Louisville. I saw this nugget. This is unbelievable. This is crazy, man. You want to talk about a crazy nugget. So we were talking about St. Peter's knocking off Kentucky. Do you now know, and I'm sorry, Husker fans, for bringing this up, but St. Peter's now has more NCAA tournament wins than Nebraska. Did you hear what I said, Dusty?
I did.
St. Peter's has more NCAA tournament wins, as does Hampton and Lehigh, than Nebraska. Nebraska men's basketball has never won an NCAA tournament men's basketball game.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. I don't know.
They've had some decent teams.
I don't know if people saw my tweet last night about K-State fans in Nebraska or not, but that's what I was saying. I saw that from a K-State fan, and I'm like, I don't know why K-State.
Why are you worried about Nebraska?
Why is K-State fan tweeting this out? Like, general person could, but like, why does Nebraska live rent free in your mind right now?
Yeah.
Like, I don't. It's like, I haven't really thought about them since they left, to be honest with you, unless somebody else brings them up to me.
Well, a person that covers Nebraska in the media put it out there, So he was, and then he.
Yeah, I mean, that person's the right person
right,
to put it out
right,
there, right?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
He's like, put it out, like, I'm the one that's putting this out as a K-State fan. Like, yeah, I don't think
he also
really
put out there that Teddy Allen was on New Mexico State, won a game, and it didn't work out for Nebraska. And then there was some other player that was with somebody else, and they won a game yesterday, and they're not on Nebraska's team. And then there's Creighton, who's, of course, moving on next round as well.
Yeah, that's what I was like. It should be the Creighton fan putting that stat
yes,
out, right?
Absolutely.
Nebraska's never won a,
absolutely.
A single NCAA tournament game.
We turn to the National Football League. Byron Pringle, no longer a Chief. He signs a one-year, $6 million deal that includes $4 million guaranteed. Good for him. General Manager absolutely. Ryan Poles is familiar with Pringle from their time together with the Chiefs. Poles was hired as the GM of the Bears. Pringle caught 42 passes for 568 and 5 touchdowns in 17 games last season. So he's the newest Chicago Bear. A Bear receiver I wanted the Chiefs to go after was Allen Robinson. He's not available now. The Rams assigned him to a three-year, $46.5 million contract that includes $30.7 million guaranteed. I will tell you, if I had known that's what the cost was going to be, I wouldn't even recommend it.
No, yeah, exactly.
That's higher than I thought he would get.
Absolutely. I didn't see that coming at all.
The big move, of course, yesterday is that every single star in the league now, it seems, is going to the AFC West. It's like everybody hates Patrick Mahomes and they want to make his life miserable. The Raiders have acquired Davante Adams from the Packers. They also made him the highest-paid receiver in the National Football League, inking him into a five-year deal that pays him $141 million. Now, remember, that's not all guaranteed. The Raiders give up their first and second-round picks this year to the Packers. Couple things here. One, everybody's going Aaron Rodgers. Why did he come back now? I mean, now they take away his best weapon. He has 150 million reasons why he came back, okay? So he's going to be fine money-wise. What they're going to do at receiver for Green Bay, I don't know. And Aaron Rodgers was informed about this stuff happening the last few days. Davante Adams was not going to sign a long-term deal with Green Bay. They weren't going to franchise tag him and have him be unhappy. He wanted to go and be a Raider. In fact, the Packers offered more money, according to reports, and he wanted to be a Raider that bad. So he went to the Raiders. He also gets to be reunited with Derek Carr, who was his quarterback at Fresno State for a few years, and they did very well there. So that'll be interesting. You got an all-pro tight end, Darren Waller, now Davante Adams. Hunter Renfrow is a good possession receiver. The Raiders, it's a major upgrade, no doubt. There's no doubt they needed a stud receiver. Henry Ruggs, of course, got in trouble with the law, you know, killing somebody, racing out in Vegas or wherever it was. He's not going to be with them, of course. It's a great move for the Raiders in the short term. But I'm going to tell you something. This could blow up in their face a few years from now. Because, one, they have a ton of money on a top-flight receiver where there's tons of really good receivers in the NFL draft. There's still some free agent receivers that are pretty good that are out there, like Juju Smith-Schuster and others that are still decent receivers. I'm not saying they're as good as Davante Adams. And I see this a lot of times. Guys that are with unbelievable quarterbacks go to other teams with quarterbacks that aren't as good, and their careers just go south. And I'll tell you this. Any wide receiver that played for New England with Tom Brady and then went somewhere else seemed to do much worse. Wes Welker might be the exception, and guess who he got paired with eventually? Peyton Manning. So, like, I see it all the time where these guys go from Danny Amendola was one of those guys. Amendola. There are others that have gone from great teams, and then they go somewhere else, and they just disappear. There was one of the Thomas receivers for Denver went to the Jets. He disappeared off the face of the earth.
Eric Decker.
That was another one.
He went to the Jets, too.
Yes, he did. So my point is, just because Davante Adams is a great receiver in Green Bay and he goes to Las Vegas with Derek Carr doesn't mean he's going to put up the same numbers. The other thing is he costs a ton of money, costs him a first and second round draft pick. The Chiefs, a lot of people are getting riled up because the Chiefs haven't made a lot of moves. Justin Reed, you restructured Frank Clark's deal, you brought Justin Reed in, so forth and so on. And I'm going to tell you right now, as Chiefs fans, you need to just chill out. Everybody around you is making all these big, huge moves, but they're also spending a lot of money in doing it. The Broncos gave up a lot of draft capital, took on a lot more money to bring in Russell Wilson. The Chargers took on a ton of money with Khalil Mack. The Raiders gave Max Crosby a huge extension, and now they're bringing in Chandler Jones. They're paying him $51 million. And now they're giving $141 million to Davante Adams. To me, what this is the rest of the division putting all their chips in at the exact same time. You know how this works in poker? When there are three teams that, well, let's think about it. If you know anything about poker, you got three hands are left, right? It's like the Chiefs have went ahead and folded. Like, we've got enough money right here. We can play another hand. But the other three teams have all called each other. If you know anything about poker, all three have called each other. The Broncos... who made the first real move here? It was probably
Was Mac?
Was Mac first or Wilson? I don't remember which.
I think Mac was
okay.
Before
so
Wilson.
So let's go with that. So the Chargers are the first one to put all the chips in. They go with Mac. And then they signed and then they got J.C. Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Chargers put all their chips in saying, I got a great hand here. This is my poker analogy. You don't get a lot of poker analogies on the show, so enjoy it. So the Chargers put all their chips in the middle of the table. We're all in. Chiefs are like, we fold. We got plenty here. We can play another hand. We're good. Broncos say, oh, man. Oh, I just got an ace to fill my hand. That's Russell Wilson. I'm all in. Okay? We got Randy Gregory now, and we got Russell Wilson. We're all in. Chargers and Broncos. Ah, it's a two-man race. Oh, wait a minute. You're the Raiders. No. We think you're both bluffing. We're all in as well. We'll raise you Chandler Jones and Davante Adams. $200 million right here in the middle of the pile. Chiefs are sitting back going, this just got interesting. The Chiefs are like, well, you know, one of these teams is going to come out of this, obviously, as a winner of the hand. Then it'll be the Chiefs versus that team for the rest of the table, right? I think that's what we're looking at here. I think one of these three teams is going to be the serious threat to the Chiefs. And granted, in division, you play each other twice, and it looks like a really tough division, and it looks like the toughest division in football. And Chiefs fans are talking about how it's the greatest division in the history of football now because all these guys got – listen, if Khalil Mack gets hurt, Russell Wilson gets hurt, Chandler Jones doesn't perform, suddenly this doesn't look so great. Davante Adams is like Eric Decker, and he disappears going to a different team because they have Aaron Rodgers to throw the ball to, and he's got Derek Carr, and they're not on the same page. Just because these moves are made doesn't mean they're going to work. It looks impressive on paper, but you know what? I don't know how many years now we've heard the Chargers are going to win the division, and they never do.
Yeah,
they hardly ever make the playoffs. So, Chiefs fans, don't freak out here and get all crazy worried. Listen, if the Chiefs go to battle with the team they have right now, yes, you should be worried. But they won't. They're creating cap space. They're also going to draft. Brett Veach's last draft or two has been very good. They're going to draft some guys to help this team. They also got 15 as their quarterback, and they got Andy Reid as their head coach. They're going to be fine. They got Tyreek Hill. They got Travis Kelce. The Chiefs are going to be fine. I'll tell you the biggest thing you should be worried about as a Chiefs fan with this deal is not on the field. You shouldn't be freaking out Davante Adams went to the Raiders. You can. Feel free. You don't have to. The thing you should be worried about this deal is the Chiefs are negotiating an extension with Tyreek Hill, and they were thinking $20 to $21 million a year. You don't think Tyreek Hill's price just went up? This average yearly deal here for Davante Adams is $28 million. And Tyreek Hill probably thinks he's as good as Davante Adams or close to it. So the Chiefs not getting extension done is going to cost them more money more than likely, which then can impact some moves you might make and how you got to, you know, massage the salary cap. So that's really, to me, I don't get all riled up because Adams is going to the Raiders because they still is Derek Carr, their quarterback, not Aaron Rodgers. The Raiders get Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams. Now I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a package deal. So, but the money makes it to where the price probably went up for Tyreek Hill in a contract extension, which could impact the Chiefs probably even more so off the field than eventually in turn on the field.
Yeah, for sure. I say in the AFC West, in your analogy there, that the Chiefs are at a different table playing a different game.
I would
hitting 21 all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think the analogy, analogy would be that these other three stepped up to the same table the Chiefs are at, and the Chiefs are already got plenty of chips to where they can sit this one out.
Yeah. They're head and shoulders above the division right now, and it's showing in free agency and trades.
Because like, these teams know they need to make those
moves. They
know
what they need to do to come back and to be a part of this, right?
Absolutely.
And so you can't have situations where you're at the end of the year and the Raiders and Chargers can both tie and make the playoffs. No, that's not where we want to be.
No.
We want to be not in a situation where if we lose, we don't make the playoffs. So the Chargers, like you said, they're the perfect example of a team that – has for years and years and years been anticipated to be a really good team, make the playoffs and you know, challenge the Chiefs. And it's just not happened as far as from the standpoint of the whole season. You know, they might win a game here or there. Raiders might beat the Chiefs here or there. Broncos aren't, that's for sure, lately. And so, you know, the Raiders and Chargers have, you know, win a game here or there, but you can't sustain it for the whole season and be able to overtake them at the top of the division. It just hasn't been able to happen. And so you've got to make the right moves. And at some point, that's you might get more wins, but at some point, that's still going to cancel out, right? maybe not cancel out the Chiefs, but cancel out somebody else here in your division, mm-hmm. and now you're the team that has now pulled away. There's been plenty of times we thought it was going to be the Raiders the last couple of years, and then they have issues within their team that they faltered. And then the Chargers are a team that would have always been trendy. That haven't been
here's a little bit of a different take on this for Chiefs fans, and I hope they're listening right now. Immediately, Chiefs fans go, well, this division's so much tougher, which, you know, on paper it is, and so much tougher. And then the Chiefs got to play a first-place schedule next year, and they got to play Tampa with Brady back, and they've got to play Buffalo. I don't know if they're on the schedule, but they got a really tough schedule outside of their division.
Yeah, Buffalo won the East, didn't they?
Yeah, so they play Buffalo. They play Buffalo, and they'll play Cincinnati, too. So they got a tough schedule, no doubt. But everybody gets caught up in that and like, well, now this is tougher. These six division games are tougher for the Chiefs than they've ever been before. That's all true. But you don't think now with all of these three teams making these upgrades, the Broncos were kind of the one you could win. Now with Russell Wilson, Randy Gregory, the team, that's not a gimme anymore. It's also harder for the Raiders and Chargers against the Broncos.
Yeah.
It's harder for the Broncos against the Raiders and Chargers. My point being is you always would lose to the Chiefs for the most part, but you could find a way to go 2-2 in the other four. Now you might go 1-3 or 0-4 because it's tougher for you yourself in your own division because it's not one team that put all their chips in and everybody else folded. Everybody put their chips in the middle of the table against the Chiefs. And that's going to make it harder for those teams to win their own divisional games as well.
Yeah, and it's somebody's got to come out of that pack, right?
Right, right. And by the way, the Chargers are the paper champions of the NFL. They're the Super Bowl paper champions every year. And here we are again. Whoa, oh, God, they got this guy, they got this guy, they got this guy. Whatever.
Because there's people that are putting Herbert in, like, elite category.
He hadn't been in the playoffs
yet. Can he get to the playoffs before we put him in the elite category?
That'd be great.
You have him ahead of some guys that have won Super Bowls, right?
That's crazy.
On this graphic that I see the other day. And it's like, no, I'm not putting him there yet. He's an outstanding talent and has done way more than I ever anticipated he would coming out of Oregon.
Sure.
I don't think anybody expected to see what he's actually been able to accomplish.
No doubt. A couple more things for Larrabee go here for the weekend. And then class will be dismissed. Deshaun Watson sweepstakes reportedly down to the Falcons and the Saints. I don't know which organization is more inept. There's three in the NFL. The Giants, after everything that they did with Brian Flores. The Jaguars and hiring of Urban Meyer and how they handled all that train wreck. And now the third inept organization, which they used to be inept, and then they got better once they drafted Baker Mayfield, ironically enough, is the Cleveland Browns. What are the Browns doing? Like, the Browns, they talk about, oh, yeah, Baker's our guy. You spend a number one overall pick on Baker Mayfield. And Baker Mayfield, I like Baker Mayfield. Full disclosure, I like Baker Mayfield. I don't think Baker Mayfield's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I will say that. But I'm going to tell you something. Baker Mayfield is only 26. He is a competitor. And I will tell you this as well. When he got drafted, the Browns didn't, what are they, 1-15 or 0-16? They were horrible. They're absolutely god awful. And first year, 6-7 as a starter. Second year, he plays behind a horrible offensive line. They go 6-10. Then they get good. They make some moves. They get better offensive line. He has a really good year. And they're talking contract extension, possibly. That's how much they liked him. And they go 11-5. And if not for Chad Henne converting a fourth down and one, a long run, and then a pass to Tyreek Hill, Cleveland might have won that game, and who knows what happens.
Yeah.
And then this year, he played with a torn labrum in his shoulder. The guy played hurt for 15 of the 17 weeks. The guy gutted it out for this organization. He helped turn around this organization from a complete laughingstock to being a Super Bowl contender the last 2 years, at least in the preseason going in. And yet, Baker's like treated like he's... What's the quarterbacks that's god-awful? He's treated... Like, I guess, Geno Smith? I don't know. I mean, he's treated like he hasn't accomplished anything. And the Browns then publicly, and maybe they told Baker, and even if they did, well, we're interested in Deshaun Watson. Well, that's basically, you're telling Baker that he's not good enough, which is fine. There is nothing wrong with the Browns trying to upgrade a quarterback. I'm not trying to say that they shouldn't do that. The thing is, you basically have shut the door on the guy that is your quarterback.
Yeah.
And so now Baker says after they go after Deshaun Watson, and Watson decided that, guess what? The report is he isn't comfortable with the front office in Cleveland. I wonder why. So he pulls out from being considered to go to Cleveland. And also the package wasn't good enough for the Texans. Now Baker wants a trade. I don't blame him.
No.
I don't blame him. He's been the whipping boy the last 2 years. He's the whipping boy. And without him, they're still an organization that's trash. I mean, without Baker Mayfield, they don't make the turnaround they've done. And last year, I repeat, if Baker Mayfield has the year he had last year, and he's perfectly healthy, I understand it.
Yeah.
Dude was playing with torn labrum in his shoulder. He's done everything he's been asked in Cleveland. Yes, he's very vocal and sometimes says things social media-wise. So do other people like Aaron Rodgers. So, Baker, I hope he gets traded. And I hope he goes to a team. And I'll tell you, the team that would fit, I think, well with him would be the Colts. The Colts need a quarterback. Baker, with Frank Reich, I think you got a quarterback that is your head coach, a former quarterback, Frank Reich. I think that you've got a great running back, Jonathan Taylor. You've got a good offensive line. The defense isn't bad. The Colts should have been in the playoffs last year. Baker Mayfield, to me, is better than Carson Wentz. That's what I feel. At least the first last few years, he is.
Yeah.
And he was not healthy last year. I don't even count last year against Baker. I really, truly don't. But he wants a trade. Who can blame him? Who can blame him?
I can't at all. I would put the Houston Texans into your list of terribly run organizations.
Oh, yeah. Too. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that was just almost understood. But you're
them,
right.
Yeah, give them the fourth spot there. There's four. Whichever one you want.
The final four to tie in the NCAA tournament team of inept organizations and the NFL. There you go.
I'm just sitting here like, and I maybe it's irreparable, you know, the with Watson and the Texans, but I'm like, I would think I'd try hard if he's not convicted of a crime.
To keep
him. Does he want to stay?
Right.
You know, like, talk to me.
Why do you insist on getting rid of him?
Bill O'Brien's not here anymore. Let's work this out. Let's stay here.
Right.
But, I mean, it's probably just the damage is gone, and maybe they don't want the name around Houston, even though he's not being charged with any crimes.
I don't know how he's felt about there in Houston after everything.
Yeah.
You know, that's
so that's
the
probably their thought process on it. But in my mind, I'm like, why do you absolutely have to trade him?
Right. And technically, you know, Baker requesting a trade, and people say, well, the relationship is broken, and he's got to be traded. And technically, he doesn't have to be traded. Now, Browns could keep Baker. And he might have a good year this year, and everything's happy. Everything's happy-go-lucky. It happens in sports. Kobe was almost traded to the Bulls, and then they fixed things in L.A., and that worked out. So sometimes it happens. Baseball, Royals play their first game today against the Rangers, 3:05.
Yeah.
They're in Arizona, so that'll be fun. And by the way, spring training starting, first game's today, and Carlos Correa is unsigned.
Yeah.
Trevor Story, outstanding shortstop for Colorado, unsigned. Nick Castellanos, and there's a drive to left field of the Reds, very good player, unsigned. Kenley Jansen, a closer from the Dodgers, unsigned. Michael Conforto of the Mets, a very good outfielder, unsigned. I mean, there are like Jorge Soler's unsigned.
Yeah.
And he had an unbelievable postseason. It sounds like people are getting hot to Trout over Soler right now. But what I'm trying to say is there's a handful of really good players led by Carlos Correa and Trevor Story that still don't have employment. And we're starting spring training games, and the season starts in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's very – and I know there was a lockout, and that delays
things.
That's
why most of this is happening.
But I'm surprised Correa – I thought he'd be the first one off the board almost.
Yeah. It was wild to see Freddie Freeman even take as long as he did to know where he was going.
Right, right. And Fernando Tatis is out for 3 months, fractured wrist.
Yeah.
And they said that had there not been a lockout, the team doctors would have been able to examine him, everything, would have been able to diagnose everything, and that obviously he probably would have missed maybe a month. Instead, he's going to miss 3 months. And so he was asked, according to a report, he was asked about, asking him about a motorcycle accident because he rides a motorcycle. And it's in his contract he's not supposed to.
Yeah.
The Padres could void the $300 million deal. They could. They're not going to. because a young guy still prime of his career.
Yeah.
So he fractured his wrist, apparently, from a motorcycle accident. And they asked him about the motorcycle accident, and he replied, which one? So he had more than one motorcycle accident. You wonder why you don't want Patrick Mahomes playing pickup basketball?
Yeah.
You know why you don't want your guys jet skiing on the lake? Or water skiing, I should say, instead of jet skiing. You know why you don't want your players driving 150 miles an hour down the strip in Las Vegas? You know why there's clauses in contracts where they don't allow you to go surfing in the ocean, or why they don't allow you to, do skateboarding tricks. There's things in all these contracts.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're not allowed to go ride a motorcycle or a moped or whatever it might be. It's because that's an investment and people put a ton of money in. But if you get hurt doing one of those things and it's proven that you did, you are in risk of voiding your entire contract. And if you have a career-ending injury doing one of those things, you lost your whole contract. We sit here and say guaranteed, and that's why you want that guaranteed money up front, the signing bonus, because then once you get it, it's in the bank. They can't take it away. That's why that's so important, especially NFL. Mm-hmm. But there is clauses in every contract, and I'm sure Mahomes has a clause about basketball.
Yeah.
I'm sure of that. And probably baseball as well. And Fernando Tatis is just lucky he's in his prime, or this whole $300 million contract could have been voided.
Yeah. Make sure you read all those terms and conditions, you know.
Which one? Which motorcycle which accident? I'm sorry, I'm a little bit unclear. I broke my wrist. So you're telling me I have a fractured wrist? Yes, you have a fractured wrist. Yes, you're driving a motorcycle? Oh, yes, I have quite a few motorcycles. We hear you had an accident. Oh, yeah, which one? Rewrite the contract if it isn't already in there. No motorcycle riding for Fernando Tatis. Pronto, ASAP, get that deal done. But it sounds like it was already in there.
Yeah.
All right, enjoy the best... The second best day of the year, according to Dusty. Yesterday and today. The madness is here.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.